For another episode of the Game Boys podcast. I know you're on the edge of your seats here. You can't wait to see what the Game Boys have to say next. I'm here with someone you may be familiar with. His name's Bowman.
Christopher Bowman, in fact. Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Thanks for coming on to my show.
our show, but glad to be here.
All right, so what have you been up to?
Just same old shit, man. Just working on schoolwork every day.
He's schooling a lot.
I'm schoolboy and getting mauled by my cat.
Okay.
That happened. And it's attempting to get rid of my video games still, and I we'll see how impatient I get, and I might end up trading them in to that shithole retro store that we have near us. We'll see what happens. But
yeah,
it was a pain in the ass to even sell a 360 Slim for like a good price.
How much did you sell it for?
I was listed it for 60, but realistically, I wanted like $45.
Is it like the Elite version, or is it the one I have?
The actual good Slim, like okay. The best 360 you can get. That is like the ideal 360. Yeah. So I thought it would be an easy sell because I have it complete in box with Kinect and everything. And yeah, just offer up shady people. And I ended up just bringing it to work to sell it. And one of my coworkers went, "How much are you selling that for?" And I went, "I don't know, $40. And he went, "Okay." And he was all over it.
There you go. You made somebody's day.
Yeah, so maybe I'll just keep bringing all my shit to work and just selling myself that way.
Right.
So other than that, not much else. What about you?
Yeah, same shit, working. Been doing a lot of work around the house. Had to replace some ceiling fans and stuff. Lots of fun stuff.
Joys of a homeowner.
Mounted all my TVs.
God.
So, yeah, you know, I've been playing a lot of Darkest Dungeon still.
I've been seeing that.
Yeah, so, still great. I'd like to end it soon, though. I mean, I have other games I need to get to. So
that's the thing with the RPGs. Even when they're really fun, after a while, you're like, okay, I'm ready to move on now.
It says nothing to do. Like, if there was no other games in the world and time wasn't an issue, then I'll play it forever. Like, I'll put 100, 200 hours in. It's all the other things that are waiting on me to get to them that makes me want to be like, okay, I'm done. Like, I want to get through this. But I mean, the game itself is awesome, so I'm still enjoying it a lot.
I've been playing Cave Story Plus right now.
Okay.
Liking that one a lot. I'm pretty much almost done with it, but I think with my busy school schedules, right now I'm like becoming more and more open to indie games because they're just such usually 10 hours max, a lot of them.
Right.
Is your mic working and everything?
You yeah, right? No, it's fine.
I kind of was already going to jump into this topic.
Okay.
I actually feel that right now we are once again in a renaissance of indie games.
I think we're in a renaissance of gaming in general.
You think so? There's too many games, but I am thinking, I think what I wanted to address in this topic was, what is the future of big budget titles right now? I feel like a lot of games, even like a lot of popular titles, aren't necessarily big budget ones. Like Fortnite and PUBG, those aren't really huge studio games.
Yeah.
And I think and we're getting such an influx of like really great indie games. We got Celeste recently. We got Hat in Time. We got, I mean, Darkest Dungeon. We got, it's especially on the Switch, there's just a huge, like, all these games are getting way more attention. Stardew Valley, Fury.
Right.
There's just hit after hit after hit after hit, and it just seems like those types of games are taking my attention away from big titles. I'm paying less attention to like big budget titles right now because of that. And I don't know what that means for the future of gaming. If we really are heading towards that direction of like where we're not necessarily having like mobile app store type deal where you know like you just bunch of small apps or everything are the big sellers. I don't know if that's where gaming is heading to, where we're just getting a lot of popular low-budget games.
I think that there's a place for them. I don't know if they're all going to go in that direction. I mean, you look at the issues that they're having with Battlefield and Star Wars Battlefront and things like that, where they're finding that it's not, you know, you have a AAA game that comes out and they put a campaign in it that takes up millions and millions of dollars to develop, and the game comes out and people play through the campaign once in 5 or 10 hours, and then they spend a year playing the multiplayer, and now it's getting to the point where they're like, okay, well, we're not putting a campaign in. People get upset, but the money comes from the loot boxes or the, you know, the DLC or just the ongoing support of usually the online games. That's what makes all the money. You know, PUBG makes it, you know, they sell the game, but also I'm pretty sure they have skins and whatnot. Fortnite has the skins and things like that, just like Overwatch. And these are games that Fortnite's free. So you give the game for free, and then they make all the money off of the consumables and stuff. So I think there's a place for indie games, and I also think there's still a place for AAA titles. It's almost just like movies, where you have these big budget movies that are going to make a lot of money, but the budget is so huge that the money they make is dwarfed. Whereas what they really would like to have is a Blair Witch that costs $500,000 to make and makes $100 million. So it made, you know, 100 times more than what the budget and the advertising and stuff costs. But you're not always going to get those. You know, not there's one Fortnite every 5 years. There's one whatever that you could, you're only going to get, it's like lightning in a bottle. It happens once in a blue moon. You know, Overwatch doesn't, a game like Overwatch doesn't come along constantly.
Yeah.
It's a perfect blend of what people are into right then, combined with the addicting nature of, you know, the things that you're selling or whatever. So I think there is a place for narrative-based games. I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto 5, where it's just, that's a story-driven game. Not necessarily story-driven, but there is a story, there is a campaign, and that game is the most sold piece of media, the most profitable piece of media ever. So there is a place for big AAA games, but I think the thing is with phones and technology and stuff, it's a matter of getting the media into the hands of people with less resources, and that's where you get these renaissance, basically. Like you said, that's what happened in the actual Renaissance, is like the printing press and stuff.
Yeah.
It gave the ability for people to learn and read and things like that.
Spurred more creativity.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And it became more widespread. So now you have all these people doing all these things, and eventually when you throw enough shit on the wall, something's going to stick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what we're seeing with indie games, where it's like, yeah, we've got Stardew Valley and you know, Dark's Dungeon and Cave Story and stuff, but for every one of those, there's 100 pieces of shit coming out that we don't hear about.
Yeah,
it's
just
a nonstop influx of garbage games, and those are the diamonds in the rough. But yeah, it's you know, it's the same with AAA games. There's a lot of crap that comes out, and I think there is a place for you know, for everyone, just like low budget movies and stuff. Every once in a while you find a gem, but I don't think that just because of the popularity, I think people are going to try to cash in on that. I think we're going to see even more like PUBG and Fortnite clones and stuff, but just like we saw Minecraft clones,
mm-hmm.
but those never took off because they were imitators, and it at a point it's too late. And I think with Fortnite and stuff, it's too late. Like Overwatch, if a new game came out that was like Overwatch, it's too late for that because everyone's like, well, I already have Overwatch and all my friends play it already. Same thing with Fortnite. It's hot right now and everybody's playing it. And it's unlikely that a replacement's going to come along, a game similar to it, and steal its fan base, because it's like when the Xbox One came out and you had all these people buying it because, not because it was the best console or had the best games, it was just like, well, all my friends are on Xbox and, you know, they're, and we're all Xbox gamers and I already have all these Xbox, I have an Xbox account and stuff, and it's just like, I can't justify switching over. Same thing. So that's the, I think that's another risk that you run with these games as a service, where you get locked in. I've spent X amount of money on buying loot in Overwatch or whatever, I'm not going to switch to the new game that's popular now. So yeah, I mean, I think there's it's great. I mean, there's, the more competition you have, the better in anything, really. The more competition there is, the more the better the product gets.
So, I think we're just seeing more, because independent platforming gaming really started to take off during the 360 era, because they actually welcomed it with open arms, indie gaming, mm-hmm. and Steam.
Yeah, it's a 10-year anniversary this week of the Xbox Live Arcade.
Oh, the Xbox Live Arcade? Wow, yeah. 10 years. So I think we're at that point where finally we hit that spot where, like, every publisher and developer sees the value in indie games, so they made the process a lot easier.
Yeah.
Steam to a fault. But overall, I think it's been positive. And yeah, we're reaching that point where a lot more people have the access to programming, and a lot of people are being inspired by these indie people. So I think because we're at that 10-year mark, we're starting to see the people who were, like, in their late teens, early adulthood, playing these indie games and getting inspired by them. And now we're getting, like, these great indie titles that are just... because I can think of so many on the top of my head, and these are games that... It's great for me, just because I get bored of AAA games after a point. Even, you know, I'm not trying to just generalize all AAA games, but there's just such a unmatched level of creativity when it's coming from, like, someone who's not... who wants to make something mm-hmm. fun, exciting, and they just have an idea, and they roll with it, and it's not... tested and tested again with focus groups about what people want in gaming. They're just they have a creative idea, like what kind of like Valhalla, which is a game about a cyber space bartender. You're not going to get an idea like that that's going to get a giant big budget. No studio is going to be like, you know what, let's go all in on this on this bartender's visual novel story. But now that we have this platform, we can have that type of creativity, and we can have more original games, and gaming as a whole will become less stale, which was my complaint back in the Xbox and PS2 era. I felt like at one point it was getting stale.
Yeah, and just a side note, I do like what has happened. I like where indie gaming is, where it's gotten big enough to where they're not getting the budgets that the big AAA games do, but like they occasionally will get backed by the major publishers like Sony or Nintendo. Like Nintendo will... You know, Sony will put their... it happened with No Man's Sky, mm-hmm. where it's like they'll put their resources into, like, helping that game get along or whatever. And that was a disaster, obviously, but, like...
Well, we have a story like Cuphead, which is the opposite of...
I don't know if Microsoft directly helped them, though.
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's another example where it's... They're not going to develop the game themselves, but... They see the potential and they say, okay, we'll put it on our system and we'll advertise it for you and stuff.
That's why it's never going to be released on anything other than PC and Xbox, because Microsoft stepped in.
Right. So, yeah, it's interesting for sure. And hopefully things will keep going as well as they have been the last couple of years as far as the quality and the amount of games.
That being said, I just think there needs to be a better way to display the content, the quality content. I think a lot of people have been bringing up. I know Arlo from YouTube had a whole video about Nintendo Switch's eShop and how the good games get buried in the trash. And like when the service first launched, Nintendo was very picky about what's
in the games. Well, the eShop is a whole other topic because it's really unintuitive.
No, yeah, exactly. And I think that's the danger when it comes to like indie titles and how... developers and platforms like Steam need a better way to organize these games to a point where we're just not getting garbage thrown in our face, and like we're letting the good games shine and like have a place.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this was interesting. I probably am stealing one of your topics here.
Go for it.
So Resident Evil 7 has been announced for Switch.
Woo!
Yeah, a big deal at first, and then, but it's a cloud version.
Womp womp.
So, I mean, all right, so I guess we'll get into it, but, so essentially, if you're listening, you know, you have to be connected to the internet, and it streams to your Switch. So the Switch is not actually running the Resident Evil 7. It is being ran on a remote server, and their computers are running the game, and then it's basically streaming the image to you. It's an interesting concept that's been done before, and usually with mixed results.
PlayStation Now works relatively decently well. Did you ever try a trial out of it? And just
no, but I'm curious. Oh, but you, so you're talking about like on your PC, like streaming on your PC or whatever?
Both. I've tried all three platforms on PlayStation Now, where I played it for my PS4, Vita, and PC.
And it's just purely streaming. You're not actually playing the game on your console.
Exactly. It's all streaming. It's just,
and how was it?
Overall, I was very surprised on how smooth it ran.
Okay. What were you playing?
Like indie games. I did play like Dragon's Lair on it. I played Katamari Damacy on it, like the original PS2 one. I played that.
What about like a accurate platformer where like input lag and stuff would matter?
I didn't really get a chance to test out something like that. It's not perfect, but like, it's,
for Resident Evil 7, it seems like it'd be fine since it's like a slow-moving horror game.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a Twitch shooter or anything like that. I mean, what are your thoughts on this? Where are you at with it?
I mean, I see the positives of it. Okay, here's the good things about it. Little, like you mentioned this to me, like little Timmy, he's got a Switch. I can see myself being a kid, or even, you know, I just don't have time to buy multiple systems, and I can't afford them, but the new game comes out and I want to play it at home. So I buy this and that's a cool way to play it. But my problem with it is that, one, the system is like, the Switch is touted as being a portable system. That's the whole point of the Switch. Like, that's what the whole thing is on the Switch, that you can take it anywhere and everything. And it's just, you can't get reliable Wi-Fi service everywhere.
Anywhere, really.
Really, no.
Unless you're at a house.
Yeah. So that throws that out the window.
No,
so,
no public Wi-Fi is good enough to stream a HD game on.
Mm-hmm. So, and I also fear that I don't want this to open the door for other developers to go, you know what? This is how we can release our game. This is a great idea. Because I know that, like, when Doom and Wolfenstein and probably even L.A. Noire was ported, it was a lot of work to get these games running on this system. They have to scale them back, and they have to clock it down, the frame rate, to make it work properly. But at the end of the day, Doom runs decently well, and that's what people want. They want to be able to take Doom on the go. Like, that's the whole thing, is that I can take a big title like this and play it on the airplane and on the bus. That's the whole selling point of the Switch.
Right.
So I don't want developers to feel like that they can just take the easy way out and be like, you know what, we're just going to release this on a streaming service, and you know, but we'll eventually release it on the Switch, and then they don't.
Yeah.
So I think that's my biggest fear about this whole service, is that, you know what, fine, if it's just like, we really can't release this game realistically on Switch, but you want it, but you want to play it on Switch, here you go, this is our option for you. At least they're trying.
Yeah.
Like, that. Like, I'll give them that. Like, that's, at least they're like, thinking outside the box and how to have this game running on the system. That's where I'm at with it. I'm kind of 50-50 where I see the positives of it. I will never buy it because I have a PC. I have a PS4. But that little kid or whoever who only owns a Switch, I see this being a cool thing for them. But is it really that hard to have a PC? Is it really hard to have a PS4? Like, these systems are so cheap.
They are, but they aren't.
Yeah.
If someone who grew up poor, like, we had one console per generation, and we were lucky if we got that one. You know, those the years where I got, you know, I got my PlayStation, it was, my parents were always trying to find a way around having to buy it. And it would be like, what do you want for Christmas? And we'd be like, a PlayStation. And they'd be like, what else do you want? And we'd be like, nothing. A PlayStation. Like, we would have to forego the chance of getting what we wanted by just being like, by like, you know, lying and saying we only want this one thing, and they'd be like, well, please, you know, get us something else. No. And you know, we'd have to put all of our, we'd be say get it both of us, it could be both of our gifts, me and my brother. So we didn't have a bunch of consoles growing up, so I do see the I do see it as a plus for that kid who doesn't have his own money, but that's about it. And it's not that expensive, I think. I think they're, well, it's like $30 for 3 years or a year and a half of a rental or something like that.
$20, I think.
Yeah, so that's interesting. But on the other hand, I'm totally where you're at with it, where it's just like, I don't want to give developers an easy way out.
Yeah.
I think it's this, I think the sales are going to determine whether we'll see more of these or no more. I think that depending on how this sells, you'll either see other people trying to give it a shot. It's interesting. I see a value in it in games that just could not be done. Overwatch, maybe. Maybe not. That's an older game. It's got a specific art style that could be done with the Switch, probably.
But it absolutely could run.
They, but a game like, I don't know, what's a big game that's come? Grand Theft Auto 6, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2, games that push modern consoles, you know, the PS4 Pro, a game that would push the PS4 Pro is never going to be able to be put on Switch. A game like that, it could be interesting for people who are Nintendo, hardcore Nintendo people only. Because those exist. These people who, they've never played an Uncharted game or even a Grand Theft Auto game because it's not, it doesn't come out on Nintendo consoles. And vice versa, people who only play Xbox games who will never play Uncharted game or whatever. And so if someone's only has a Nintendo system and you have these major third-party games that just cannot be put on it. And it's not even about graphics. Like a Grand Theft Auto game or a Red Dead Redemption game, the map is like too massive. There's too much stuff going on at once that it just simply cannot be done. Then maybe I could see something like this. But for single-player experiences like Resident Evil 7, I don't, you know, you're in a hallway with two zombies. You can just dumb down the graphics or whatever.
See, that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, so a game like Grand Theft Auto, okay, I could understand because you have a million cars driving around and people, like, walking around and a giant city with no, you know, no draw distance and stuff. Okay. But Resident Evil 7, no, you couldn't port it. You can port that. So, I think there is a place for it, and it's interesting. At the very least, maybe hopefully we can look back on this and say, thankfully they did it with Resident Evil 7 because now we have all these great games that couldn't be played otherwise. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this will be the starting point of something like that. You know, who knows? That's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, it just sucks that the internet on the Switch really isn't that reliable either. Even when you're connected on LAN, direct connect, it's still not great.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's going to be up to Capcom. It's probably not going to have much to do with, because you're talking about like Nintendo servers.
Not even that, because I'm talking like when you connect an actual direct, when you test your internet connection plugged into the Switch, what do you get? That's what I'm talking about.
But it's always like that for any console. Yeah. It's like that on the PS4.
Not as low as the Switch is.
Well, so I pay for a gig. I get maybe 700 or 800 on my computer, and on the PS4 I get maybe 50. So that's awful.
Yeah.
And they're all like that. They always are. And you know, you only need, I think, like, I don't agree with these estimations because it never works out this way, but I think it's like 10 to 20 megabits a second to stream 1080p. So it has good enough internet for that. We'll see. Hopefully it'll have like a dynamic quality where it will change the resolution to based on your quality of your connection. So All right, what do you got for us next?
Well, actually, the Wall Street Journal actually had an interview. Well,
fake news.
Well, there was a recent article from the Wall Street regarding the PS4 regarding the lifespan, a life cycle.
I'll just cross off one of mine.
Of the PS4. Uh-huh. And that it was entering the end of its life cycle, but they recently commented again and said, we will use the next 3 years to prepare the next step to crouch down so that we can jump higher in the future regarding the PlayStation systems. So that means, what the takeaway from this is that we're not getting a PS5 anytime soon. So
I think, I don't know if I, see, because that could mean, like, when they say 3 years, okay, well, they're still making the PS3 and selling it. So what does that mean, 3 years? The lifespan of the PS4, three more years, that could mean a lot of things. I don't know, they're still...
But they said next 3 years to prepare the next step. That's where I'm getting...
Yeah, it could be a lot of things. I mean, we've talked about this before. Neither of us, and this seems to be the consensus, because I listen to other podcasts and watch other, commentators and stuff, and like, the consensus seems to be,
we don't need it.
We don't need a new PlayStation. The PS4 is fine. So, I think that the PS4 is like at its peak right now. It's at its peak, mm-hmm. And I think maybe starting next year, you're going to start to feel like, all right, you know, maybe we're ready for a new one the following year. So 2020, maybe. Maybe they'll show it off next year. I think it depends on the how the next year goes and how the E3 goes. And, yeah, that's where I see it. I think they've, it's already in development. There's no question about that. And yeah. When you get into development, it doesn't matter how good your console is doing. When you're developing something like that, the time to release it is the time to release it because of, based on the technology. If you have it ready next year, you don't want to wait 2 more years just because your current console is doing well, because then by the time it comes out, it's going to be outdated, and then you have to spend more money on R&D and more development costs and things like that, upgrading it again. So it's just, when it's ready, it's ready. And I think it's already in development. So, you know, I think though, we're not really at that. How much is the PS4, the base model now? I think you got to wait till you get to that point, that golden, that perfect spot where it's like $199 and it's just flying off the shelves. That's like the final stage in a console's lifespan. It's like, it's down to $200 and it's just, it's the last people who've been waiting to buy it are buying it now. And then when that initial rush is done, that's when they release the new console.
PS4 is like $300 right now.
Okay. So if this year or maybe next year they announce that it's being price dropped to $200, I think that's when you know that they're going to release the PS5 a year later or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's all speculative right now. Who knows?
Interesting. Just interesting that we're at that point where it's every company just doesn't even know how to make the next step.
Because they don't want to, yeah.
It's just such an investment, and so many developers are still able to develop games on these systems just fine.
The problem is that we're getting into diminishing returns of technology. You can't. It's getting to the point where you can't make it look much better. The jump is so small that people don't feel like they need to spend another $400 or $500 on a new console. The difference between an NES and a Super Nintendo was clear.
Yeah.
Immediately upon looking at it, you're like, okay, this is the future. Same thing, the jump from 16-bit to, you know, 32 and 64-bit, you look at it and you're like, okay, this is a huge leap.
I think it's also, I think the VR experiment had a lot to do with this too, and that how VR didn't really catch on. I think if VR like really caught on, I think we would be moving on to the next step a lot sooner.
Yeah.
Because like VR, you could definitely always use a more powerful system.
Right.
And it didn't catch on, and I think the issue it's the opposite happened. The issue is that the price, the entry is too high.
Mm-hmm.
So the last thing people they want to do is just once again create another price barrier.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I don't really know what the future will be, because I think we are in a weird point where the companies don't know what the next step actually is, because we don't even know how long consoles are even going to last for at this point, how much longer they're going to be viable to keep releasing consoles.
Hopefully, we'll see. The PS5 will be something innovative, because Sony doesn't do that ever, and that would be, you know, neat, something out of left field, maybe like a augmented reality visor or something like that. So, yeah. All right. So on the topic of PS4, this new Elite controller came out or announced for the PS4.
I didn't see this.
Really?
No.
So are you familiar with the Xbox Elite controller? It's like absurdly expensive.
Yeah.
It's like $150 or something. And you can like take it apart and modify it, put all this, you know, however you want it, basically.
I'm looking at it right now.
So yeah, they're coming out with an official one for PS4. And
it's official?
Yes, it's... I think it's like third party, but
officially
it's
licensed
Hori. I think it's Hori, yeah.
So. S-C-U-F.
Anyway, I thought that was interesting. It's getting to kind of the point where they're trying to blur the line further and further from in competitive gaming between the PC and the consoles. I think that's a good move. I don't know if we're ever quite going to be there until, like, full VR, like motion controls, like you're wearing a glove. Until that happens, until basically everybody on every platform is using similar types of controls, including PC, I don't see it happening. But it's good that it's good that these things exist.
Yeah, it's gonna be $170 for the wired and $200 for the wireless.
Whew.
So
you better be real serious about your PS4 gaming.
Very. I mean, at least you can use it for any... You can use it for PC as well, but definitely not for me, but my brother, David, is a big, big competitive gamer, and he has an Elite controller for Xbox, and he loves it. Like,
really?
Oh, yeah, because he plays, like, first... He's one of those people who, like, plays first-person shooters on Xbox, and... It really puts him a step up, just like the back trigger and everything, being able to jump with that, and he can reroute the button in so many different ways, and he has the analog stick on the left side.
It's like a touchpad.
It's longer. It doesn't have a touchpad. There's no touchpad.
There is one that you can get. Instead of a stick, it's like a flat touchpad, and you can... Yeah. So I imagine that is better for, like, Twitch aiming and stuff, more fine control. Yeah.
He's got the longer analog stick, and he feels that's better for him to be more precise in aiming.
Okay.
So, definitely not for me, but it's always cool to have that open, and I think...
Well, man, you're one of the game boys. How could you not?
The only thing I want is a new Switch Joy-Con that I can switch out the D-pad and have a better D-pad.
Yeah,
that's pretty much all I ask for at this point. When it comes to...
Come on, Nintendo, give us those NES-themed Joy-Cons at E3.
Because, dude, I like playing handheld, and I pull it out, and, like, my hands are killing me when I play with those Joy-Cons for a long period of time. And,
yeah.
Like, it's platforming, and it's just, you can do it, but over time, it's like, God, this is so not good.
Yep. All right. What do you got for us next? We're lukewarm on the PS4 Elite controller.
Very lukewarm. Well... What do you think the future of... I was kind of joking about this earlier, but what do you think the future of Classic Editions systems are?
Oh, like, no.
Yeah. Do you think that...
They are the future, apparently.
that we are going to keep getting new slew... Like, how many different types of versions will we get? Like, will we keep seeing re-releases of them? How far will they go? Because now we're getting... PlayStation is rumored to have one now.
Right.
That it could happen. Like, how far can they really take these? Are these like the new Furby of this generation? Is what I'm asking, basically.
Well,
or are they a lot more viable and have a lot and have like a permanent foothold in the gaming world?
The NES Classic was definitely the Furby of its year.
Yeah,
that's for sure.
That would tickle me almost for sure.
Yeah. You know, I guess these, as long as people keep buying them, they'll have a place in them. I don't think anyone plays them really as a thing. So I think once the supply and demand stops being absurd, I think they'll stop. I don't think the quality is too good. That's the problem. The quality of these are really high, so they're not like those shitty Atari flashbacks, which are garbage. So
at games, Genesis systems.
Right. Those are cheap to make, so you make them for $5 and then you sell them for 20 or 30.
Roll them out on Black Friday and people are
right,
gonna wrap
and
them
you're
up.
Making a ton of profit on them. These are high quality items, the controllers, everything about them. So I think that once they stop selling out and people going nuts over them, I just don't see, I don't see them being super popular. And it just falls into this, you know, people are nostalgic. So I think that as long as you have people that were playing these games 20 years ago who now have jobs and have money to waste, you're going to sell some. And they are the new Atari flashback. Those are the types of people that buy those Atari flashbacks, is a 40 or 50 year old mom who's like, oh, I used to love Atari, doesn't know jack shit about games, doesn't know jack shit about Atari, and just sees it in the checkout aisle at Walgreens for $20, picks it up, plays it for half an hour, and that's it. And that's exactly what these things are now, is, you know, people pick it up. I personally know people who bought it, played it once, and never touched it again, and that's all it is. So I don't see a big market for multiple releases. I really don't see that. I don't see like a market for another SNES Classic with 30 different games on it. I don't see that happening. I can see them just continuously selling them and releasing them until they stop being popular. And I definitely foresee an N64 one. And I could see the PlayStation one, you know, happen. But aside from that, yeah, I think it would be cool. I'm curious to see what the connectors would be like for the PS1 one, because I think it would be cool if you had, like, if it worked with the PS4 and you could, you know, have, like, a PS1 controller for your PS4 or PS3 and play your classics on there or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But, yeah, so I think there's a place for them. I think it's a very small place. I think the majority of people that are buying them are just doing it because it's the popular thing to do, like Furby. The difference between this and Furby is, I think in 10 or 20 years from now, at garage sales and stuff, these will still be sought after because they have a use, as opposed to a Furby, where once they stop being popular and, you know, the hot thing to have, nobody gave a shit, and nobody's picking up a Furby and being like, can't wait to set this up at home and start playing with it. But I could see, you know, that happening with a NES Classic in 10 years. At a garage sale, someone sees it. Oh, sweet, I'll play this when I get home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think they're as worthless as Furby or Tickle Me Elmo, but I think it's a fad for the most part. That's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, I really like them, and I do want to see them come out in different ways with expandable memory.
Right.
Like, expandable, like, maybe has some sort of, like, USB slot in the back or something, and you can just, like, they come out with, like, brand new stuff you can just, or even a cartridge system, like a Switch-type cartridge that you can stick it in the back of the system.
I was just about to say, you know, have the cartridge slot work, and you sell little cartridges for it.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot they could do with it, and I don't see that happening. I would like it to. Just as someone who's downsizing their retro collection, it was really cool for me to like turn on my SNES Classic and play through these games and not have to worry about
it. I've gotten many hours of fun with like friends drinking and stuff playing Kirby Dream Course and stuff.
And it's so small, so it's so easy to just be like, oh, I'm going to take my games over to my friend's place and it's plug it in. And who doesn't want to play like Mario Kart or like Tetris Attack, which is not on the USA one?
Thanks for rubbing that in.
But just turning it on and having these games like available to me right away, it just has a better charm to it than just releasing a compilation CD on like the PS4 and just being like, here's 50 ROMs on a disc and just throw them on there and play them on your current gen controller. It has a way cooler charm to turn on a mini version of that system, because it makes the click that the Super Nintendo made, and the controller is spot on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't believe how accurate it is.
Yeah. It has a spot, because like I have a game room. Not everyone has a game room, but even then, it's nice to have something in my living room attached to my HDMI TV that just works the way I need it to.
Mm-hmm.
And these games don't, you know, with the exception of my PS1 games, because they'll work on a PS3. None of these fucking games work on like an HD TV. And even so, even if they did, it's like, what am I gonna, you know, have in my living room? Like, have like a 30-year-old console that I won't play that often hooked up, and then like it's not practical for me. So I do like having the mini systems hooked up down there, that, you know, sometimes I just want to pop on Mario Brothers 3 and just run through it real quick, and I don't have to leave my couch for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can play it on my HD TV. That is nice. So
I missed out on the NES Classic, and I actually do plan on getting one.
Man,
when it comes
I
out.
Really, really hope they're releasing more controllers.
That is a concern of mine. I really want two controllers.
Yeah. If they're not going to do it, I don't even see the point of why they included a second cartridge slot.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, a controller slot. Like, you've made it so nobody can play this thing two-player.
They may as well have just repackaged it and just jack up the price like $10-$15. People will pay it and then include a second controller.
Yeah. So. All right.
Yep.
What
else do you got?
What else do I have? New Switch bundle in Japan.
Yeah. The Switch is going to be released without a dock.
Or an AC adapter, which they love doing in Japan.
They love doing that.
Yeah.
Great.
I understand more the options. Thinking. I understand the thinking behind it is because it uses USB-C. So anyone with like an Android phone, or no, even Apple, the MacBook charges through USB-C
now.
But haven't
they having issues with other USB-C chargers going into the Switch? That's what happened with the third-party docks that ended up frying systems.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure on it, but regardless, I do like the option. It's cool. So for those of you out there, you've got a Switch now in Japan. It's about $50 cheaper. Doesn't come with the dock or the charger. It just comes with the system and the two controllers, and I think that's it. I think also the straps.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's $50 cheaper. Would have been nice if it was like $80 cheaper or $100 cheaper, because that's what they charge for the dock.
The
and
dock
stuff.
Costs about $100 to make. They're losing money on those things.
Yeah, right. Fucking plastic shell with a USB charger in it. So yeah, this was cool because people have been talking for a while now of, well, maybe, like, a lot of people. This isn't me, this is the opposite of me, but a lot of people only play it portably.
I know for a fact that, like, Lars mostly plays it in handheld mode.
Yeah, fuck Lars.
Fuck that guy.
So I only play it on the TV, really, and then very rarely, while I'm watching, like, basketball or something, I'll play it on the couch. But the apparently there's a lot of people out there that only play it portably, so this is cool. So, like I was saying, a lot of people have been wondering for a while, are they going to release a mobile focus? There's been rumors, not rumors, but speculation that maybe one day they'll just release, like, a 2DS version of it, where it's just one solid tablet without the removable Joy-Cons or whatever to mm-hmm. lower the price and just be a cheap, like, budget model where it's just solely the portable aspect of it. And this kind of, you know, I think they're testing the waters.
I'm all for that. I never mind when more economical models come out of systems. I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's never for us.
No,
but...
no, absolutely not. But, like, even the 2DS, I, like, passed by it in the store recently, and I'm like, you know what? This is actually a pretty cool device.
You know what one I kind of want is the Pokemon Yellow, like, clear shell.
2DS XL? They have 2DS. A 2DS XL like
no,
that?
No, the actual, like, slice of cake.
Oh, that 2DS? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they released a set for all three Pokemon games.
They did a yellow
with
one?
With a clear plastic shell so you can see the inside, and it comes bundled with the virtual console download
cool.
of it.
That's cool.
So they have one for red, blue, yellow, and then green. So yeah, I'm kind of tempted. There's no doubt in my mind eventually I'll pick up a 2DS. I'll see it for $10. Because there's been times where it's like, $40 or something on sale, or $50. Those things are dirt cheap. The not clamshell ones.
Right.
So, yeah, I know people actually. This is going off on a little bit of a tangent because now we're talking about the 2DS. But I actually know people who are partially blind in one eye or whatever, or are blind in one eye. It's just like there's no need for the 3D. They really like the 2DS.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely see a place for this. I'm glad to see that they're Nintendo always loves releasing like a shitload of different SKUs for their console. So
they're really great at selling hardware in like many different ways.
And it's just I never get tired of it.
No, they do get
like,
a great job.
I don't ever get angry about it. I'm just like I get angry only because I want to buy everything that they release.
Yeah.
So, you know, they release a new model of the 3DS, and or like a limited edition. I'm just like, great, I really want this $200 console that I already own
two of, yeah.
So, that's why I liked the new 3DS regular edition so much, because it had the removable faceplates. So I'm like, great, now I can only pay $10 and swap out the way my 3DS looks.
If they ended up releasing a new, because I like the new 2DS XL, I think it's cool, but my issue with it is the size, and if they had like a new regular 2DS, I probably would have been a sucker and gone.
I love this thing.
Because I love the size of that thing. It's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. The screen is bigger than the old 3DS.
Yeah.
But it's the same size as the original 3DS. So, yeah, it's awesome. So yeah, I think this is a move in the right direction, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if they announce a new SKU at E3 or by the end of this year, just something, a budget model or a pro model or something.
We're getting another SKU at some point, I think.
No doubt.
And no doubt.
And the same thing that will happen with me always happens is I'll give the original one to my wife, who doesn't care enough to like get one herself, but we'll take mine and I'll get the new one. So
if they release a more like I really want that Switch Mini someday.
That'd be nice. Yeah,
I'd be all over that.
It's funny because I would probably be more likely to play that portably than the one that I have now.
Yeah,
that's the problem is it's too big. Mm-hmm. And also, whenever they do release a new SKU, I would like them to have a glass screen. I hate the plastic screens. They are pieces of shit. They scratch so easily. I need a glass screen. It's just, come on, it's 2018. We need a nice glass OLED screen.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Got anything else for us here?
Yeah. So, let's say that you go bankrupt.
Okay.
You have to get rid
of it. It's not that far-fetched.
You go bankrupt, and you're losing the house.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, Jesse divorces you, and she's like, for some reason, like, it's taking everything from you.
Okay.
So your entire game room, as you know it, is going away.
Uh-huh.
What is, like, what are two of the games that you're going to grab off the show that are ones that are like, you're not taking this game. Like, this game is staying with me. Like, I'm sorry. Like, what is that game? I can think of my game. Like, mine would be, like, Splatterhouse 2. And Earthbound, obviously.
Yeah, probably just because of how difficult they would be to replace. probably my Yu Yu Hakusho for Sega Genesis, and my Genkishi Boy for
PC
Engine.
That's a good choice.
Just because all these other games I could get relatively easily again.
Yeah.
But those games I got in Japan, the price has skyrocketed. It's just going to be a fucking pain in the ass to replace those. I don't have the games that I'm super attached to are not expensive games. You know, my number one game growing up was Mario 3. That's a $20-$30 game complete. So, I'm not going to bother grabbing that off the shelf. You know, you could have went without all the, morbid, if you'd get divorced and just say, your house is on fire. Which two games are you going to grab?
Hey, man, I didn't mean to strike a nerve.
That's typically the normal question people ask is, if your house is on fire, what are the two things you grab?
If you're getting divorced.
If you're bankrupt, you're losing your house, your wife's leaving you.
Everything.
Yeah, that's... but yeah, I mean, those are two of the most valuable games and also the hardest, the games that I search for the hardest. And, you know, I got them in Japan and I... did all the ground, you know, I did all the footwork and went around all the places and found a good deal on them, and now they're double, triple what I paid for them, and I paid a lot for them. So, yeah. You know, they're, it's, those two games are, that's probably it. If I'm going just strictly on, nostalgia and stuff, I don't know, that Chrono Trigger Complete is pretty nice.
Yeah.
Maybe my complete Mike Tyson's Punch Out. I'm really fond of that. I know my brand new in box Ninja Turtles 2, which is not new anymore because I played it, but it was the first time it had ever been played. So I popped it in and it worked the very first time I stuck it in, pressed the button.
Yeah,
that was cool. Still got the Pizza Hut coupon in there. So, yeah, just stuff from my childhood, but if I was really going to grab two games, probably those, just because of the value and stuff, and how hard they are to get replaced. And you said you Splatterhouse 2
would be the top one, just because that is my original childhood copy.
Okay.
And I still regard that as, one of the most important, one of the most, nostalgic and important games of my, of gaming period. I can play that game 1,000 times and never get bored of it. Not more than Earthbound. Well, almost more than Earthbound, because it's not an RPG. It's just a quick game. I can pop it in and play for an hour and a half and just beat it real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have vivid childhood memory of when I got that game, and it's my original one. And I never liked talking about value, but as you said, it would just, I'm only talking about value just because it would be harder to get a hold of it again,
right?
Because that game has gone and it keeps going up in value. The Splatterhouse games.
Yeah.
I flipped my shit when I finally found Splatterhouse 3. Just because and those games are starting to get reproed a lot too. A lot of Genesis games, a lot of those popular games are getting reproed to shit. It's like the Bloodline series for Castlevania.
Yeah.
So
it's real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I was on a you talked about replayability with Splatterhouse. So if I was stuck on a desert island where I could only play one game forever, I would grab Tetris Attack.
Oh, hell yeah.
Because I'd never get tired of that game. You can always get just a little bit better. That or the original Game Boy Tetris.
So, yeah, that's an interesting choice, original Game Boy Tetris.
Yeah, I mean, you could play that forever.
My favorite Tetris is, I don't think you have it, is the Tetris DS. I think that is the best iteration of Tetris ever done, in my opinion.
Tetris, I think, is probably the perfect game ever. It's the best game ever. It's not my favorite game, but from a game standpoint, it is the best game ever. It will never get tired. You'll never get old. You can play it forever. You can always get a little bit better, and also it's so simple. It's like what you would show an alien. If they wanted to see what games were like or whatever, because
they would probably
just see it and you instantly know what you're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, if we're just talking solely from replayability, if you could only have one game, my personal choice is Tetris Attack, just because I like that game more than Tetris. But yeah, so Those are my choices. You have any other topics? Or
I think that about wraps it up for me.
Okay, so we have one more thing. We did get a Q&A.
We actually got a Q&A?
Yes, from Snyder in Orlando.
Thanks, Snyder.
He said, what is your favorite good and bad E3 presentation or moment?
Oh, I already know my favorite worst one.
Me too. There's only one. All right, what is it?
The Sony press conference of...
Oh, mine's different than yours.
Okay, no, my favorite is the Sony press conference of, like, what was that, 2006, I believe?
2000... Yeah, it was 2006. It was right before the PS3 came out.
That is forever.
That was Meme City right there.
That was my favorite conference ever. I have non-ironically watched it in its entirety, like, yeah, recently, just because it's such a perfect storm... Or terrible storm of just
weird
E3 moments is stacked up. There's just so much gold. There's attack this giant enemy crab. Like, it's historic based on real Japanese battles.
And here's this giant enemy crab.
And, like, he's just, like, stuttering and, like, trying to, like, come up with, like, ways on how great the game is. He's, like, it includes real-time weapon change. Like, what is this? What happened?
$599 US.
And then the mic drop of the price reveal where he said $509 US, and you can just hear the silence in the audience to just be like, oh god.
Yeah, that's...
like, that is historic, because there's been so much shit talk of E3s every year. Everyone's just like, oh, did you see that? And then we forget about it the next year. That one is timeless.
Yes,
I never have forgotten about that whole conference.
Yeah, it's like, what's your favorite?
Honestly, my favorite, similar, I don't even know if it was E3 or not, but this the full rollout of Nintendo Wii, where they, like, showed all the games that were going to come out, yeah, and they had actual gameplay footage.
Yeah.
Because the system was so mysterious for so long. We didn't see any gameplay of anything for so long. And, like, whenever they would talk about...
Are you talking about the trailer they showed with, the guy jumping over the couch and, like, hiding? Like...
Not that. I'm talking about, like, when they had, like, the full one where it showed, like, Wii Sports for the first time.
Right.
And then it showed a bunch of, like, this weird indie titles being popped up, like puzzle games and stuff. It wasn't... Uh-huh. The games themselves, looking back, they're not even that impressive. It was just the most impactful because there was just... so much hype for that system. It was ridiculous because I was bored, as I've told earlier, in the PS2 and Xbox era, I was bored of gaming. And I just was... And the DS came out, and the DS, like, gave me that thing I was looking for, where it was, like, unique gameplay. Mm-hmm. I got Phoenix Wright, Ace Attorney. I got Trauma Center. I got really cool music rhythm games. Like, the DS, like, is still... I consider that my top system of all time. I really do, because it's just, like, hit after hit after hit after hit, and it came in the perfect time because I was bored with gaming.
Right.
And just perfect. So when the Wii was coming out, I was just convinced that the Wii was going to do what the DS did.
Right.
And just really revolutionize gaming, and that was just a huge moment for me. I skipped school to watch the Nintendo E3 Wii conference, and that huge presentation was big for me.
So my favorite bad E3 moment is Nintendo's 2008 conference.
Oh my god.
Specifically the Wii Music.
Oh my god.
The Wii Music reveal, which was like their big... That was like their big thing at the show.
Yeah, they were so proud of it.
Yeah, they spent a long... That was like the main... That was the equivalent of this year's Smash Brothers, that was the big headliner. They spent half the conference showing off Wii Music, and it was a disaster. It was just stupid. It was so stupid. And the guy, like, they got a professional drummer to, like, sit there and drum on the Wii Music, and it was just so dumb, man.
Oh,
using
God,
the Wii Fit.
God help that guy.
The Wii Fit pad is like a drum pedal and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they all come out and do the band where they play Super Mario Brothers, and it was like...
sounded so bad.
Yeah, it just sounded bad. And it was exactly what you would want out of, like, just like a joke, like a like it was something out of a sitcom or, you know, Family Guy episode where they're just like, remember that one time we tried to play Super Mario Brothers, and then it cuts to them playing, and that's what you would expect to hear. It's just like a really bad rendition of off key, like
off everything.
Yeah, so that's it's hilarious. I love that. I watched that one myself. Like you said, you watched the PS3 one. I watched the Wii Music one.
I've watched that a lot. I think that was just such a. If you want to see what Nintendo turned into when the Wii success got to their head, watch that.
That
completely captivates that moment where Nintendo is just like, we're selling a bunch of systems. We're awesome. We know what we're doing now. And they just like came out with just a piece of shit. And everyone's like, what are you doing? You clearly aren't interested. I think I remember having that moment where I'm like, they're not interested in gamers anymore. They're interested in fucking selling the system it became the Furby.
Yeah.
Once again.
Arlo just released a video about that entire conference.
Okay.
So if you're listening to this, go out and watch that. He does a pretty good job at showcasing the entire conference and all the goods and the bads. And yeah, he focuses a lot on the fact that 70% of the conference is nothing but like, here are the sales figures.
Yep, I remember that.
And it's like putting everyone to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're doing so well. So we know what we're talking about. Like, it was just such a smug Nintendo at that time.
So I think my favorite...
Good one?
My favorite good one... Probably, and I didn't start watching these until the early 2000s. It wasn't commonplace to be, you know, they didn't have streaming, you know, you dial up. So, and I don't even think they really broadcasted them in the 90s. So my favorite one was probably the DS reveal.
Mm-hmm.
I was super excited. This was pre-PSP, so it like blew my fucking mind that they were. You could play Mario 64 on the go, and it looked better.
Your initial impressions were, like, excitement? I remember when Reggie pulled that out, people were just like, what is this?
Oh, no, I couldn't. I remember, like, running to my parents and being like, I have to have this. Look how cool it is. There's two screens. It's got a touch screen. It's going to have internet built into it. Like, I was flipping out. That's probably...
The internet part was huge. I remember seeing that and being like, what?
Yeah.
That's insane.
And then the next year, the PSP came out and made it look like a child's toy.
Yeah, that did happen.
So, so that was probably my favorite. And then, like, a runner-up would be... the GameCube. But I think that was Space World, actually. But... They showed a lot of off for the GameCube. They showed off... This was Space World, I think, but they showed off, like, Mario 128, and they showed off that Zelda game that, like, never came out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looked like grim dark.
Really dark
like,
Zelda.
Like, Link fighting Ganondorf, and then when they finally did release the Zelda, it was Wind Waker.
Good troll.
Yeah, so... I think the most excited... my favorite moment is 2003... 2004, I think. Did they reveal it 2004 and then release it the same year?
I think they released it the same
year. Like 3 or 4 months notice. Yeah, so 2004, Nintendo E3. I was real excited about that. And I got it that year for Christmas, which was only a month after it came out and launched. That was another instance where, like, I didn't give my parents an option. I was just like, don't want anything for Christmas but this DS. So,
Did you get that at launch?
For Christmas. They got it.
Yeah, it came out like November.
Yeah, so I got it for Christmas. I had to wait.
Yeah.
I spent my entire rest of my junior year, playing DS instead of doing school work.
Yeah. I even got my system taken away from me, like, during a math class, and he, like, held on to it for, like,
really?
A week.
Just on a real quick side note, I remember whenever we'd have a substitute, I would play my PSP, like, just through class, and if they asked me what it was, I remember one time in Japanese class, I was like, yeah, this is my
translator.
So.
Oh, my God. So, okay, did you prefer the PSP over the DS?
They both have their place. They're so different.
I just couldn't get past the UMDs back then.
I thought it was cool.
I just didn't like. I was so into handheld gaming. The idea of long loading times on a handheld would just. I couldn't get into.
They never bothered me. Here's the thing about the PSP, and the DS and all that shit is, I bought the PSP. It launched. When did it launch? November of 2004. Or five, rather. 04?
Came out 2004, December.
December 2004, okay. Yeah, exactly. So, the PSP came out the same month that I got my first girlfriend and lost my virginity. So, I never... And as a guy, and any other guys out there, you know, like, once you start, like, dating and seeing girls and stuff and, like, getting laid... Like, I stopped playing games. It just stopped, like, that my focus and determination and energy were totally focused on that.
I don't have sex, so, like, I just kept playing games. All right.
Well, yeah, so that's what happened. I got, like, my first girlfriend, and, like, I got the PSP. I remember I had it when we met, and then, like, I don't remember ever... really messing with it again after that because I stopped playing games. I stopped doing everything.
That was pretty much everyone I knew with the PSP, not the sex part, but everyone I knew who played it would just brat, because I remember I would get teased because I had the DS and then someone would be like, this is way cooler, and they would like show their PSP, and they would never show games off. They'd be showing that the fact that they're playing a movie on it, and I'm just like, okay, cool, you can play whatever movie on it.
There were some good games. I played a lot of the Wipeout that came out at launch.
PSP's a great system. I didn't appreciate it until the modding happened for me. Like once I could mod it and I could just load games right off the system, that's when it became like a really cool system.
I didn't appreciate it until I watched Metal Jesus's Hidden Gem videos. Okay, so on that note, thank you for the Q&A, Snyder, and if you're listening out there, please send us your Q's and we'll give you our A's.
Please.
We're talking to you
out there.
You know, you can send it to us on Twitter @the_gameboys with a Z. You can leave a comment on YouTube videos. I read the comments. I'll take your question. You can send it in a Candygram. You can send a Telegram, Western Union.
Mm-hmm.
You can leave it on our Facebook page, the Game Boys at Facebook. You can
throw a brick.
No.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that. I do have cameras, so I will find you. And I will kill you. Or at the very least, beat the money out of you to replace my window. Yeah, so if you're listening, send us those Qs. We'll give you our A's. And on that note, you can follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to us on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Play Music, iTunes, and all that rigmarole. So, unless you've got anything else to say, Bowman.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening, and we'll be seeing you next time.
Bye.